Hi, everybody. Welcome to Domain Sherpin. Thank you for tuning in to the podcast with the best domain name and digital asset content in the world. Today's episode is a Sherpa short titled Good Vibes Only with Ron Jackson, where Drew and I are joined by the one and only Ron Jackson, founder, publisher, and editor of DN Journal. We hear about Ron's history, both pre-domain and then all of his activity and work in the domain space. Then we talk about DN Journal and the annual State of the Industry article that Ron recently published. We get some highlights from the article, and we also get Ron's own thoughts about the future of the domain industry. And then Drew gets into the idea of the compression of value and how it applies to domain names. All that and more is coming up on today's show. And remember, if you're listening to the audio version of this podcast, you can also watch the video version at domainsherpa.com and on our YouTube channel at ds.tv. You can also listen to the shows on Apple and Spotify and other podcast platforms as well. So please make sure to hit the like button and the subscribe button everywhere that you can and help Domain Sherpa grow the pie. We also integrate our shows with Muse.ai, which provides search functionality for the shows and transcripts as well. And big shout out to Unstoppable Domains, the ICANN accredited registrar that gives domainers powerful tools and the lowest pricing in the industry. They've joined the Afternic Fast Transfer Network and offer fully featured landers with LTO self-brokerage and just 3% commissions. You can also register to $5.coms every Friday. Talk to them on X or NamePros to learn more. And also, big shout out to Escrow.com. Here at Media Options, we've relied on Escrow.com for years. They've handled some of our biggest deals, including 7- and 8-figure transactions. We use their specialized domain services because they understand domains. Escrow.com is fast, secure, and accountable with workflows built specifically for domains. Whether you're buying your first domain or closing million-dollar deals, they protect buyers and sellers around the world from fraud while ensuring smooth transfers. Escrow.com, domain deals done right. And also, shout out to DNX.com. DNX is the domain intelligence platform featuring all-in-one search results from the top marketplaces, including GoDaddy, Cedo, and Atom. DNX is the most advanced way to find and acquire your domain name, so go to DNX.com today. And finally, big shout out to our own business, Media Options, the number one domain brokerage in the world. Find out more at MediaOptions.com, where you can also sign up for our newsletter for the best domain opportunities available in the market every week, and also featuring key insights and other helpful information related to branding, naming, and of course, domain investing. So with all that, good vibes only, it's time to get into this episode of Domain Sherpa, where all roads lead to domains. What's up, Sherpa Network? Thank you for tuning in today. My name is Jonathan Tenenbaum, a.k.a. JT, a.k.a. J-On, a.k.a. Sherpa Winfrey, and I'm the host and producer of Domain Sherpa, where all roads lead to domains. Today's show is a Sherpa short. That's where we either pick a domain topic or we might interview somebody very interesting in the space, outside of the space, and we dig into it for a bit. Today we've got a very, very special guest. So that's right. We brought somebody special on the show today, and we're very, very excited. Hey, Ron, you better look around. He'll be here soon. So let's go ahead. And really quick, let me go around the horn and introduce the Sherpas first. Over to my left, I got my boy Andrew Rosner, a.k.a. Morpheus, a.k.a. the Dirk Diggler of Digital Assets, a.k.a. Bob Lee Swagger, the Sniper, a.k.a. Drew. Drew got what I need, a.k.a. never going to give Drew up. Get Rick Rolled, Graybeard, the Domain Pirate. Who does really have a gray beard today, man?
Yeah, today I showed up with the gray beard.
Yeah, man. You definitely, you're in character.
Well, it's gloomy weather, the cold, you know what I mean? I don't feel like doing anything. I just want to grow out my beard and, you know.
Just walk across your frame into my frame, Andrew, and then yeah. You'll be all good. A lot of sunshine.
We're still about 3 years away from that, but it's coming.
It's getting close. It's getting close. All right. Well, let me go ahead and introduce our special guest. Super excited to have him on the show today. The one and only Ron Jackson, a.k.a. Ronnie J, a.k.a. Ron Action Jackson, a.k.a. Ron Burgundy, a.k.a. Ronald Mick Jackson, a.k.a. Ron Wolf, man, Jack, son, a.k.a. DN Journey, Don't Stop Believing, a.k.a. I'm Not Sorry, Ron Jackson. Ooh, you are for real. Ron is the founder, editor. Big shout out to Outkast. Come on, man. You know I get funky with it. Big shout out to Ron, the founder and editor. Publisher of DN Journal, the leading online publication covering domain sales, news, and industry development since its launch in 2003. We are in the Jordan year for DN Journal. A veteran journalist, spent 20 years in radio and television broadcasting, including roles as a weatherman for ABC and a journalist for Fox TV. After that, he owned a chain of record stores until the rise of digital music shifted the industry. In 2000, he founded Internet Edge, a web publishing company which paved the way for DN Journal, recognized as a key chronicler of the domain industry. Jackson tracks major sales, provides market insights, and has built DN Journal into an indispensable resource for domain investors, has received many awards for his contributions, including the Lonnie Bork Award. So, Ron, welcome to the show.
Thank you, JT. I actually came, the main reason I came was for the AKAs. Now that I heard that, had that experience, I got some other things to do. But hey, it was good hanging with you guys. Oh, not much. I'm just kidding, man. Man, I had the opportunity to hang with you two for a morning, a day, a week. I would take it any time. Thank you so much.
Man. Hey, man, much appreciated. Super happy to have you here. And that bio was straight from Grok. Just so you know, that's
The only thing they had wrong, they're talking about the TV stations. They mentioned Fox. That was but when I worked there, this Tampa television station was a CBS station back in those days, WTVT. And later there was a big, this happened in a lot of television markets or musical chairs where the affiliates moved around. The CBS station went somewhere else. What triggered it all was the Fox network buying our station, though. I was gone by then. And they, of course, once they bought it, moved it to the Fox network. So the CBS station moved over to another one in our market. Otherwise, that's all pretty factual. Good job for Grok.
Oh, dude. I mean, the AI gets better and better. All this stuff lately has been
I like that
crazy.
They left the entire criminal record out, too.
That was part of the prompt. You know, I said I said positive things only, leave out any criminal history and, you know, anything that could paint you in a poor light. So they were like, so I said, but show me that stuff. And there was pages, obviously, but no, we were spared it. We spared the audience. But although people would be like, no, we want to know Ron Jackson's dark side. We want to hear about we want to hear about the bodies and the, and that stuff. Yeah, man. Well, you know, it's super, super interesting. Obviously, you've been doing this thing in the space for a long, long time. You've interviewed Drew. You know, I mean, I've had the honor of showing up in a few of the articles. And I mean, it's 23 years, which it's, you know, you talk about longevity and especially in this industry and super amazing, man. So it's I guess, you know, let's go back to the beginning. Let's kind of, like we said, I mean, we want to make this show. I mean, you know, a lot of times when you do your articles, you really go, you know, down memory lane for, you know, we saw it with Drew. You went all the way back to a beer co ham and everything else. And
We went back before that.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, I've always felt that so much of what we become as adults are based on things that happened to us very early on. When I was growing up, I got into reading very young, 5 or 6 years old, and I would go to the public library, and what I always went for were biographies. I loved reading people's entire lives, and I would hear about an interesting person and read that, and it was so interesting to me to see what happened through their childhood, youth, what influenced them to turn out the way that they do. So I almost always follow that timeline when I do a cover story. I go back to the parents and the family and, you know, how people grew up. Sometimes it's a vast change from how they started. Sometimes you can see a direct line that led to this. In Drew's story, we had the influential figures in his life, which most people wouldn't have thought about, like a high school wrestling coach, how much one guy like that can change your mindset in the course of your whole life. So I think that's an indispensable part of anyone's story rather than just starting up with whatever their career has been for the last 10, 20 years, in my case, whatever it might be. But the real story, if you want to know it, you have to go a lot further back than that.
So that's where we're
especially going in our business, in this business in particular, because
I know the point you're getting to, which is that it's such a new business that we all had history before, almost all had histories before it.
Well, no, more nuanced than that, in the sense that, like, domain names touch everything, right? On Domain Sherpa here, we say all roads lead to domains. That's our motto. Mm-hmm. And it's the truth. It doesn't matter if you're, you know, a pizza shop or you're a Magnificent Seven tech company. It's everybody starts with a domain. If you want to engage in this digital world in any capacity, it starts with a domain. And so all of those unique experiences starting with childhood play a role in influencing the decisions that we make in this business.
Absolutely.
It plays a role in which types of domains that you're interested in, which topics you go down on, where do you have esoteric knowledge that other people don't, you know. It's very, very, influential. You did those early childhood years, all those different jobs, totally unrelated to domain names. They all play a very significant role in how we develop in the domain space.
100%, no doubt about it. When I look for names, I'm surprised how often I'm looking for things that are related to those years. It's, I don't know if it's a sense of nostalgia, it's just part of who you are, but that's 100% true.
Yeah.
No, and I think you see it when you see how some people, you know, to Drew's point, you know, how some people have had their success, whether it's a finance background or it's a very specific industry, you know, science background. And then, you know, some of the other things maybe that, you know, in Drew's case, you know, being just a really, you know, a alpha sales guy, right, became the thing that really helped drive him just applying the seafood business lessons learned and to domains and then having success by applying some of those general principles and then being able to make those carry over to, you know, domains, which are again so ubiquitous and kind of touching everything. So Ron, so who do you think is your biggest influence going way, way back? I mean, what was it for you that, you know, kind of started you down the path, not just domains, but, you know, your career, which began in media and broadcasting and everything else?
Yeah, career-wise, I grew up in Ohio, and I really, going into my senior year in high school, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I played a lot of summer league baseball, though, and it was a very small town, so the local radio station would actually broadcast those games because there wasn't much you could do there, and then they could find a local business, a bank or someone who would, you know, put an ad on this. So if you had a good game, sometimes I would get interviewed on it. And so I met this local broadcaster who was calling the games. And he says, what are you going to do when you graduate? And I said, you know, I really don't know. You know, there are things I like, but I don't know what I even want to study. And from talking to him, he said, you know, you have a good voice. Have you thought about broadcasting? And I thought, no, I hadn't thought about it. He says, well, there's this new chain of broadcasting school that had opened up in about a half dozen cities around the country by network broadcasters who had formed a corporation to start these schools that's since gone away, but it was around for several years. And they had one in Columbus, Ohio. I grew up in my town was 20 miles north of there called Delaware. So when I graduated, I thought that's a great idea because if you go into broadcasting, I have wide-ranging interests. That gives you an opportunity to go off and cover a lot of different directions, which to me, you'd have something fresh to do every day. So I did go to that broadcasting school, graduated from it. As it happened, when I came out of it, there was an opening in my hometown at that same station that he worked at. So I went to work for them. And it was like a jack of all trades because it was a small market. One guy had to do everything pretty much. So I was doing news. I was a DJ. I was doing play-by-play sports, a little bit of everything. So I did that for a year. And then the Vietnam War comes along and I got drafted. So I actually wound up in the Army. Yeah. Wow. So it's supposed to be a 2-year hitch that you go in. And I will say the most memorable thing about my Army years was seeing Jimi Hendrix play live.
Wow.
And to this day, one of the great moments of my life. Well, what happened? I was sent to Augusta, Georgia. As it turns out, I never left the U.S. in the heat of the Vietnamese War because the Army made me a radio TV specialist, thanks to having been in broadcasting school and worked a year. So I was assigned to the general staff. We did a post newspaper, a closed circuit radio, and closed circuit TV for Fort Gordon, Georgia, which is in Augusta. So I'm in Augusta, and it's about a year after Woodstock. Stock, 1970, and Atlanta had the second biggest pop festival to Woodstock up to that point in time. There were two of them in 69. I went to the second, which was the biggest, which is where Hendrix played. So that was in Byron, Georgia, about a 2-hour drive over from Augusta. So I had a weekend pass and took off in the middle of the night to get to Byron, got over there. They estimates 250,000 to 300,000 people were there. And it's a crazy experience. Like we spent an hour for talking about those 3 days there. So it was 100 degrees every day. But anyhow, it's just like wonderful music. Allman Brothers, Bob Seger, all these great bands were on there. But Hendrix came on at midnight, and this was July 4th weekend. So it's the night of July 4th. Hendrix does his set. Must have been an hour, hour and a half. And he winds it up with the Star Spangled Banner, night of July 4th, and a fireworks show going on behind him. So it was just an amazing. And you've probably seen videos of him doing Star Spangled Banner.
Yeah, I was just going to say, is that the, I mean, there's one that's quite famous of him playing. Is that from that event?
He's done it more than once, but I think there's a documentary called Electric Church that I understand that was about that event. So it's the one that's probably most commonly seen, I would guess, is that. You know, a funny side note to that was a wonderful thing. Here we are years later in the domain business, and I don't know if you guys know Steve Cheatham or not. He's been in the business. He lives in Georgia. He's been in it for years. But Steve was an audio and video engineer. He was at the show doing the audio and video. He had made a name for himself doing these psychedelic visuals that went behind the performers. So I met Steve and found out he had been there. Not only had he been there, he was there the whole festival,
the whole show,
doing all the backgrounds and the sound for him. But anyhow, that was my highlight of my Army years. It was worth 2 years in the Army just to see him
just alive, to see that. You know? Yeah.
So what happened? Then I went back to Ohio when my time was up. Spent another year there, but having lived in Georgia, we only had one day of snow, and that really cinched it. I'd always wanted to, growing up, and I wanted to move somewhere warm. So after a year there, I started looking around and found that there was a station in Sarasota, Florida, had just started the TV station, and I wanted to break into TV. So they said, well, our job's on the radio station. We wanted a DJ. But if you come down, we'll give you a day a week, come over to the TV station, we'll have you do something. So I thought, get your foot in the door, and you know, that's the key. So I moved down to Florida. And this was January of 22 years old, January 72, I guess it was. So I'm doing the radio for them. So first day at the TV station, I go, he said, come on down. We got something for you to do tonight. So I'm all excited, man. This is my break, my big break in TV. So I go down, and between the 6 o'clock show and the 11 o'clock show, the newscast, they would rent the studio out so local businesses could come in and do a little production work or maybe shoot a commercial. So in between those shows, why they wanted me to come in the evening, some local mobile home park did a thing where they brought in the seniors and had them square dancing, and they needed someone just to sit behind the camera and pan the camera around. So they put me behind the studio camera, and so I got these people from the mobile home park square dancing, and that was my job for that night. And I'm going, man, I took a wrong turn. So a year ago, I watched Jimi Hendrix live. Here I am watching people from the mobile home park square dancing. I said, this is a dead end if there ever was one. But I hung with it, and they'd have me do these things for a few months. But then the main weathercaster went on vacation. They said, can you do weather? And the answer, if you're in that situation, is always yes.
Yeah.
If you want to just say, yeah, oh, sure, there's nothing to it. And I figure, how hard can it be? Anyhow, because you just tear stuff off. So I did the weather as a fill-in. Then finally the weatherman left and they made me the weatherman, which the job I really wanted was sports though, but I did weather for a year. And then our sportscaster, a lady named Andrea Kirby, who just put a book out, actually, Andrea was the first female sportscaster to go to a national network in the United States, ABC. And she left Sarasota, went to Baltimore, then to New York when ABC hired her, and she did the college football scoreboard show. So when Andrea left, I asked the general manager, I said, you know, I'd really like to be the sports director. And he said, all right, we'll move you over. And so I spent the next 18 years doing sports. So that brings you to the end of one. I was going to tell you, I have three careers, so it's a long story. So there's broadcasting. I'm kind of like the quintessential guy who can't hold a job. Then I had to go into something else now when I left broadcasting. What happened when I left Sarasota after 11 years, went up to Tampa, bigger market, covered a half dozen Super Bowls in person. We had like first class everything. We owned the market. We had like 50% of the audience share, and the other stations had about 25% each. So I did that for 6 years. But then it was bought out, which I mentioned very early in the show, by the Fox Network, actually. Mm-hmm. And they switched affiliates, and they also had a situation where the guy took on so much debt the local owner, that they started cutting people. I'm seeing people in a newsroom getting cut left and right. And by then I'd been there some time. I'm up the salary chain, and that's who they were going after. I said, I better start looking for another lily pad to hop to. So at that time, I loved music. So I decided that what I would do is open a record store. So then I got into that business, which is a whole separate thing we can go into, but I'm going to let you guys get a word in edgewise, and then that led to domains. But so there's leg one out. Music, I figured that would be right up your alley, but that was a love of mine. So that was kind of a dream I had and realized by opening a record store and a series of them that I ran for 11 years. But as you all know, following the internet killed the music retail business too.
It's like video killed the radio star.
It took them all out. It took out the Tower Records and Sam Goody's and all of them. So if you're just a local retailer, I had some really good years there, because when I started that, it was the mid 80s and everybody was trading in their vinyl collections for CD.
Yeah.
So, and that's where the money was selling used product, not new product, because the margin on new, you're competing with big corporations, is like, 5%. But used stuff, you can make 100% on. So people would trade in these big collections, and we got bigger and bigger and kept growing, going on to new locations. So that ran for like I said, 11 years. And the day I knew the jig was up, I was in around 2000, and the artist released their new recordings on Tuesdays. So it's one Monday, and I'm at home, and down the hall from my daughter's bedroom, I hear Madonna's new album is playing. And I said, wait a minute, this isn't even in the store. How could this be? We won't get that till tomorrow. So I walked down the hall, and I said, Brittany, how are you playing this new Madonna album? And she looks at me like I'm a dinosaur, and she said, Dad, you don't know, haven't you ever heard of Napster? And I said, no. I said, what's that? So, of course, Napster was putting all, and eventually got put out of business because they were violating all kinds of copyright laws. But that, I saw it, looked at that, and I said, oh, man, people are going to get stuff before I can even sell it. And they're getting it free. They weren't even paying for it. And then on top of that, our stores had been thriving, but I'd put the last store in the university area. So it was really, really booming. But then the CD burners came in, and CDs were not copy protected. So what happened, one kid could come up and buy a CD and burn 40 copies and hand it out to all of his friends.
Yeah.
And I would say that was the final nail in the coffin, that's what finished all the record stores, basically. So there I am in year 2000. I had to close all the stores. I hung on and did worldwide mail order. I always did a mail order business with collectible stuff. So I did that for a couple more years, but that was fading away. And I said, man, I got to do something new. And now I'm at an age where it wouldn't be easy to go back to television because they're looking at kids 20s, 30s, 40s, and I'm getting in the 50-ish range. So I said, man, I don't know. I'm not exactly sure what I'm going to do, but it's going to have to be something related to the internet, because the internet's wiping out everything. And so what could I do? So I started just thinking, like Drew was saying, you start thinking of domain names, and I'm thinking of, where are my interests? And I thought maybe I should register. I did have a domain for my record store. It was the first domain that I owned. It's 1997 that I had the website on. We would sell from that around the world. So I had that experience with it, but only as a developed website. So I'm thinking maybe something in media. I didn't really want to do retail again because I saw how vulnerable that was to the internet. So as I'm looking for these domain names, I stumbled, just doing searches on Google, I stumbled upon dnforum.com. And there are these guys on there who are talking about buying and selling the domain names. And I said, wait a minute, you can sell just the name? Don't you have to have a business or a website? Who wants, what good is just the name? But I start reading it and I go, man, this is really fascinating, because as a journalist, you understand the power.
What year is this?
Excuse me?
What year is this? Sorry to interrupt.
Okay. No problem. That year would have been the year 2000 is when I started. Well, actually, the actual year would be 2002. 2000 is when I closed the record store. Did mail order for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And then the real trigger on that was the, I used to build my own computers. So in 2002.
So you were tech savvy.
Yeah. So it was spring of 2002, and I was building my own computer, so I had PC Magazine. So one day, I get a new copy. Inside the front cover is a full-page ad from the Newstar, who ran the .us registry at the time. And they're talking about .us for the first time, even though it was 17 years old, as being open to the American population. Before, it was restricted. You had to be in government or so on. And the searches I was doing, even then, for the .coms, because I had more and more things in mind, they were all taken, most of them, back then.
Yeah.
So I just looked at that ad, and I go, .us, I go, that kind of makes sense. Maybe I could get some of these terms in .us. And that's what led to these searches that I started doing that led me to DNForum. So now I'm seeing that these guys are selling just the words. So like most newcomers, I jumped in and I started registering all this stuff that made no sense and no value whatsoever. My wife's getting really frustrated because I'm putting this stuff on a credit card. And she goes, holy cow, man, she's telling her sister, he's putting all these things called domain names on his credit card. We're going to end up living in a cardboard box. So you might love him, so I have to stay with him, and we'll see where this goes. So it took a good, I made my first sale getting close to the end of that year, so 8 or 9 months, but just like got my money back. And I was so excited. Ooh, I made a sale. I've just gotten my money back. But
that was an inbound inquiry?
Was what?
Somebody came to you inbound?
Yeah, actually, they were sold to another guy on DN Forum.
Oh, okay.
Who saw me, and then he flipped them. Because then it was like all low-end flippers. You would get
100%.
A flip. So,
past the hot potato.
Right, exactly. So then, but then I did learn more. And what I was hungry for now was information, which didn't exist in 2002. I couldn't find any other resources. Every other business I had been in, there was a trade magazine that you could learn from. Like in broadcasting, we had Broadcasting Magazine. In music and the music stores, we had Billboard Magazine. I get in the domain business, there's nothing. And I said, well, I'm a journalist. This stuff is so fascinating to me. For a $10 domain name and a $10 a month hosting account, I could start my own magazine and reach the entire world for after that initial $10 outlay, 10 bucks a month. And the rest of it's all in your head. And there's your product is in your head, not like retail where you've got stuff that becomes dead inventory. But so that's the idea. I got the idea because there was nothing there. And on New Year's Day 2003, I launched DN Journal. One background piece to that is I never intended that to be my business, though. What I wanted was information, and most of the guys back then, obviously, they didn't want to share them. They don't want to tell you when these domains are dropping or what you should look for, and I don't blame them. So I need somebody to lead me in the right direction here. So one thing I know about media is that everybody has a little bit of an ego. So if you tell their stories or spotlight them, I looked at it as a networking thing to build relationships. Yeah. And I, to this day, that's why I cover so many conferences and do so many stories. Everything boils down to relationships, I think. So anyhow, I did that, started doing some of those initial cover stories. And then some of them would go, hey, man, let me tell you something. At 6 a.m., this is when this happened. And I just a light bulb went off. So then I was able to go on all in a little more educated about it and do better. And the funny thing is the years went on, particularly from when I started in 03 to 2006, when traffic went to Silicon Valley for the first time, the way DN Journal progressed, to me, again, it was just a hobby the first year or so as a networking thing. One big change was 6 months in, Cito came to me, Matt Bentley, and he said, we'd like to put an ad on there. And I had never even thought of anyone putting an ad on it. So he asked me, what would that cost? And I had no idea. So I said, Matt, I'm busy today. Let me get that rate. I'll get the stuff together. I'll send you the rate card tomorrow. I had no rate card. I had nothing. So I think, I don't want to chase this guy off here. This would be great to make a little money from this. So I send Matt The next day, I sent Matt the thing about a banner. I didn't even know what to do about banners. So I looked up what the banner size. So I give him a price, and Matt goes, "Ron, are you sure this is right?" And I go, "Oh, crap, I asked for too much." And I asked him like for like $20 or something. You know? And so Matt's going, "This is ridiculous. This is way too low." And he said, "Don't you?" And I'm not supposed to share this story, but I think even now, but in fact, I've shared it before, so too late to him. But he said, "Don't ever tell anyone this, but you should be charging us more." And I said, "Really?" He goes, "Well, what?" And he throws me on a figure that's like way more, you know, to be on the homepage. So Cito's the first advertiser. And then, and they're still there after 23 years. They've never gone off. A lot of my advertisers, they came on 20 years ago, are still there. So anyhow, we go, now we go down the next year, and some other advertisers have come on. So now instead of a hobby, I can devote about half my time to that and about half my time to researching domains, trying to acquire domains. And I still did that day, do a lot of the domain stuff. Then the next year, 3 years, by 05, it became 75% of Silicon Valley was like, it changed everything because all the VC people were there. The Verizon and Starbucks and their executives were coming in, buying up portfolios, some of whom got in trouble or buying a lot of stuff that was trademarked. So at that point, I remember going through the halls at that Marriott out in Santa Clara, and I had people coming up and saying, "We want this spot on your homepage or this spot or that spot, and we'll give you triple whatever this person, whoever the company was giving." I said, "I can't do that. As long as my policy is, as long as they have a place, they can renew it as long as they want." And so I turned down all this money, but I said, "Holy cow, now this is a big enough deal now that I could spend virtually all my time on it." So it wasn't all my time, but I would say it's 80-90% of it, where it became, as a surprisingly, the primary business. And then the domain investing, which I still hold about 2,000 names, became secondary to it. So that's how I wound up here. And now it's too late. You can't get rid of me.
That's it, man. You're locked in. Well, you know, I mean, it's such an awesome, amazing story. I think one of the things that to me stands out, just, you know, hearing it step by step, is adaptability, agency, you know, like every step of the way, you know, you kind of like, there's a going with the flow, but taking on the challenges as they come or the opportunities and being like, you know, "Oh, do you want to be the weather guy?" Like, I've never done the weather before, but sure, you know, because yeah, I think too many times people get too careful about not wanting to, like, you know, and I think
they're over-identifying themselves. You know, they put the labels on themselves that this is what I do. I'm not going to do the weather. I'm a sports guy.
Right. You're putting yourself in a box if you do that.
Yeah. I think that's probably a pretty common characteristic of people in the domain space are, you know, open-minded, you know, let's say non-linear thinkers.
Yeah. And willing to be able to be, you know, be capable to be able to do a lot of stuff and willing to get your hands dirty, right? I think that's the thing. It's like you just, and that's kind of how we are, you know, we're a small business, right? So, you know, there's times we're all sort of chief cook and bottle washer or whatever at times around different things. It's like, you know, there's no ego aside from Drew, but, you know,
that goes without saying, but you said it.
I'm just playing. Nobody does more stuff than you, man. But I think that's a big part of just, and it being in this space, because there are these different areas that you don't even realize are like different sort of, you know, avenues and verticals and paths and opportunities, and just being active and, you know, having a high level of agency, which I think is going to be important even in the world of AI. I think just being able to, you know, everyone's so, you know, obviously there's so much AI stuff, and we can talk, well, you know, this will actually be a pretty good segue into the state of the industry, because
I had a question I wanted to ask you. So first off, I'm extremely grateful that DN Journal and that you exist in the domain industry, because I think that this industry, I mean, I've said this before, like I feel so lucky to have stumbled into this industry. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously it took a lot of hard work and pain and suffering and uphill, you know, pushing rocks uphill to get where we all are. But it's been, the industry has been amazing to me and my family and to my business. And so, you know, I'm grateful for the industry, but I think that it's such a unique industry, and it's so central to so many things, but it's sort of the thing that nobody thinks about.
I know, it's amazing.
you know, it's so important that this story of this industry and its development over the years has been told, and primarily it's been told by you. You know, there really are only two, let's say, primary archives of what's transpired and the people that have passed through this industry, and that's DN Journal and Domain Sherpa. And so it's really, I think it's very important and underrated, the depth and the importance of these stories, and even just, you know, little stories, big, small, otherwise cover stories, all of it. It's this is the history of an industry that I think we all cherish. And it's never been told outside, you know?
Yeah, I think you're so right about that, Drew. And
you got to take everything and you got to put it into a book. It seems like it'd be low-hanging fruit at this point.
I'm just getting ready to say, people say you should write a book. And I said, I've already written it. It's already there.
Yeah.
The chapters are all there. It's just that, and they all exist. They never go away. They're permanent when I put them up there. So to me, it's kind of like, just be an assembly project, not much more creativity.
It's worth assembling, yeah. At least in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm shocked by what you said, that no one else has come and done. I would have thought by now some major business authors would have come in, because the stories within the space like your own are so phenomenal. There is just every story and every one of my cover stories, and I kind of picked them based on the human interest elements, where people can see how what's possible, which look would seem to be impossible, but we have so many stories like that. Yeah. That there's this incredible, it's been just an incredibly rich mine of stories to draw from, that I'm just shocked no major author has come in and done
it. In all walks of life.
Yes. Yeah, it is. The other thing I love about the internet is it's so democratizing for me to break into television. You had to, there's always a gatekeeper, and there were in so many industries that you had to get by. You had to pass someone else's judgment. Where today, like I said, I started DN Journal for $10 and a $10 hosting account. You can start any idea you have for next to nothing and create on this blank canvas. And now kids can go on TikTok and start a blog. There are essentially no gatekeepers. So yeah. The world has been open to anyone to do anything that they want to do. And that's such an
underrated point. The idea that, you know, there are not that many industries in the world anymore which don't have those gatekeepers. And even if you want to go start a new business on the internet today, most of those businesses have some form of gatekeeping. Mm-hmm. And so the domain business in and of itself is really very unique.
We shouldn't be telling people about this. Can we let's delete this episode.
It's a really interesting thing about the domain space. You talk about like writing the book and everything else, because the audience is small, because it's so strange. And we say this a lot, and that domains are so important to so many, to all of commerce, right? And brands and every company. And it's like, but at the same time, the domain space is so small and so niche and so under the radar that when people find out that it exists, they think it's like the wildest thing. You know, we've had literally CEOs of the, like, one of
really
the
smart people are just like, what do you mean there's an industry? What do you mean there's forums and people trading these things back and forth? And what are you talking about? There's auctions every day? What?
I mean, it really is really wild. And it's like, because it's not easy to be successful in it, but you know, so that's the other thing, is that it takes patience. Domains are illiquid. You know, it's one of those things that, because of how illiquid they are and because of how niche that it is, like, it's not something you can just come in with a bunch of money and you're going to automatically succeed. You have to be patient. You have to, you know, timing matters. Like,
I think it requires a high degree of curiosity, but I think that actually one of the overlooked, let's say, characteristics, is naivety, like just pure naivete to just say, oh, I'm going to spend all this money and buy these things that are just like words on the internet, put them into a portfolio that exists in a registrar. You can't touch it. You know what I mean? This is like, people are still getting their head around, you know, I can't touch Bitcoin, but we're talking about, you know, domain names in the 90s, and people are like, oh yeah, let me stuff these things into a portfolio and I'm going to sell them for money in the future. like, what? What are you talking about? What a silly idea. How do you even get your head around such an idea, you know? That naivety that ultimately, you know, I think led to a lot of success. I was leading up to the question I wanted to ask, which is, as you have documented this for so long, the industry, the people in it, the events, some of which were historic and pivotal in shifting the industry. Are there any, we've just highlighted a couple of common threads, common characteristics of some of the people, but if you're looking at the people you've written cover stories about, and you're looking at the people that have really moved the needle on the industry, defined the industry, many of which far more than myself, but are there common threads? Are there common stories? Are there things that you have picked up on that maybe people don't talk about, that people haven't observed or haven't, let's say, vocalized if they did observe?
Well, I think the one common thread, and I've said it many times, is that I've always been amazed by how many really creative people there are in this business. Because when I got into it, and I'm looking at like internet stuff, and it sounds technical, so I figured there's going to be a lot of nerds, and it's going to be whatever obscure tech language. But that's not who they were at all. If you look at the really
nerds, only showed up recently.
Yeah, exactly. But the ones that we followed through the years, if you read all their stories, they're really creative thinkers, you know, outside the box. And just to understand what we do takes, a certain mindset, where part of that problem is they don't understand it because it doesn't fit in anything that they've seen before. But to the people in it, you know, they look at it, wow, this makes sense because I can do this. I can paint and I can play music and I can do this whole thing. So the creativity is the common thread. I don't know that I could point to a single major domainer and say they didn't have a personality that had a very strong creative element in it. And they can understand that with a domain of something you try on, it doesn't work. You know, you can just start and do something else on it. It's like the ultimate blank canvas. In some cases, you never have to buy another. Yeah. Certainly not on that theme anyhow. So it's that part of it. I think they're also, I don't know if it goes along with creativity, for the most part, they're genuinely nice people, welcoming people. They have a very social people for the most part. So you feel, I've always felt it was a very inviting community. And like I said, I've been in broadcasting, which was a kind of a whole different thing, because in some cases you had to step over someone else's back. There's a lot of backstabbing, trying to make someone else look worse. And music retail, the people were very competitive too. If the store down the street, they would say bad things about you because domaining, Monty Kahn coined the term co-opetition, where you do compete in many ways, but you also cooperate in a lot of ways for the good of everyone to try to push things forward. So I do think it's a unique personality, and maybe that's why we're still a relatively small community, because there aren't that many people who fit the model and fit in. We've all seen tons of people come in and spend money and wash out just as quickly and are gone. They've spent the money, haven't made a dime, and off they go. But they don't take the time to really explore. That's why I tell newcomers now that I wouldn't buy, don't buy a thing for a year or two. Read and listen and maybe register or buy something in a drop here. And don't spend much money, because you'll end up losing it until you really start grasping what makes something valuable. And are there buyers for that out there? That's a whole different element.
So, who of all, nobody, I don't think anybody has had, maybe Richard Lau is up there. There's a few, you know, people that have really deeply, let's say, circulated is the wrong word, but, you know, had very strong relationships, you know, through the upper echelons of the domain world. But but you know, you're one of few. If you were to pick out the one super domainer, who's the one natural talent that just, is it Frank? Is it, you know, Yun Yi? Is it, who is it? Who's the guy that he just stands out to you as like, you know, nobody saw him coming and he just had a natural talent?
Yeah, I couldn't pick out one without getting in deep trouble and severing several friendships. Because I mentioned egos before a little bit. And I bet these guys, that they have that, and that's part of their success, that they have that. Yeah. I think that super domainers like that, like Frank and Rick Schwartz and let him, they actually were just incredibly hard workers too.
Yeah.
Like Frank, the story I heard when he started, he went down to the Cayman Islands and his original intent was to do online gambling. And he found out that it was illegal even there. He thought anywhere in the Caribbean were okay. So he kind of stumbles into domains. Gary Chernoff, I guess, kind of led Frank down that path, was his mentor. And so I heard stories that Frank stayed in his
basement. And what a great guy. Talk about just amazing.
Gary, you talking about Gary and Frank or both?
Gary is, I mean.
Yeah, Gary Frank, might be one of those guys.
Dudes, but Gary is just an absolutely.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't know him. I begged him to do a story, and there's an open invitation to him, but he likes to just sit back, but he's wonderful. Yeah. He is a wonderful guy. There are guys like that, and Scott Day is another one.
Yep.
A lot of these guys that no one really knows their names, and they prefer it that way. Roy Messer is another one from down here in Florida, but there's a lot of these guys that if I were going to do a cover story tomorrow, they'd be right on the top of the list that I'd love to tell their story. But like Frank would work all hours of the night assembling that portfolio. Rick would put in tons of time doing his portfolio. You know, Nat Cohen, a lot of people don't know the kind of portfolio he's got. It's insane. And
I've said a million times, I think Nat's portfolio is the most valuable domain portfolio in the world.
Could quite well be.
It's certainly the most liquid.
Yeah. I don't know everything that's in it. I just know, you know, little parts of it, and you would know far more. But I would have to agree. All those guys, though, they were all really hard workers. I don't think you get that big or that good without also not only being creative and smart about it, but also you've got to put in, and you're another example, Drew. You're exhausted from working a lot, and then you're talking about then bad weather sets in, you got a lot on your plate, but I really respect those guys who reached that level because of the work that went into it. And I probably missed some other names too if I thought about it. There's, I don't know, maybe a dozen guys, and like I said, half of them, people's names wouldn't even, a lot of people wouldn't even know their name when we say it.
I would say if you took the top 10 guys, and we'd probably come up with a pretty similar set of people if we said who are the top 10. I bet you 7 or 8 of them, most people, particularly anybody that's entered in the last 5-10 years, probably don't even know they exist.
Right. I agree.
Media Options is the industry's leading domain broker specializing in domain acquisitions, high-value domain sales, and domain name consultation. As pioneers and thought leaders on the subject of the domain aftermarket and domain name value, plus through their clear domain acquisition service, Media Options offers startups and established corporations an unparalleled scope of high-value domain options, providing access to domain names and curation technologies not available elsewhere. Media Options believes in the power of a great domain name and is dedicated to helping you obtain yours. Call or email today to put a domain to work for you.
It's pretty wild stuff. You know, I think the other thing too, you know, you talk about the gatekeeping and or the, you know, the lack thereof that made domaining accessible, right? Because you can register a hand, and that maybe it's obviously harder now, but, you know, when you can hand register a domain for $10, $20 that you can then sell for thousands of dollars, it's like, you know, the barrier to entry is actually pretty low, you know, and it's also what I think is super interesting.
Yeah, but to be fair, I could be wrong, but I don't think that there's ever actually been a time ever where you could hand register a domain and then immediately sell it for thousands of dollars.
I mean, there are one-offs where it's
happening. There are exceptions, of course.
Rare, of course. That's,
Where you get ahead of a trend, you know, some new buzzword, an election result or whatever. But for the most part, you know, I think it always took some degree of risk, meaning.
Oh, 100%. Well, look, you've told it in your story, right? It took you $100,000 of domain of losses.
$300,000
in shit domains that, you know, pigeon shit. And I think everybody.
My entire savings.
Yeah. You know, and so, but I guess what I mean is, though, but just to get into the room is somewhat easy, right? Because you just can basically just show up.
No gatekeeper.
You know,
yeah.
But interestingly, and, you know, I think this will be a good segue into to the state of the industry, because you just did the article, The State of the Industry, and compiled some of the you know, the best minds. I'll say the best and brightest minds in the space, because I was in the article.
You were in there, and a great addition, I might add.
Thank you. And, you know, talking about the major
vanilla
trends,
performance, I would say.
You know, it's so funny. Drew and I had similar comments from last year to this year, yet he's telling me that I didn't take enough risk with my predictions and things. But I mean, but here's the thing. You know, I was honest about what I you know, and what it was, which was really AI, you know, continues to eat the world. Last year it was the number one trend. And I think it's going to continue to be the number one trend, both as a driver of domain purchases and domain investment, but also in the use of the tools and the changing that, you know, and the impact that it's going to have. I think it's very important too, when you think about gatekeeping, AI creates a very interesting sort of situation where it eliminates some of the gates and the gatekeepers, and it may add them in some places, but it removes them in others. If you just saw the guy Markiplier, who released the movie Iron Lung, I don't know if people were paying attention, but this guy was a YouTuber who started, he posted his first YouTube video like a decade ago, and then he just released a movie independently that just made $22 million. And it's like, wow. Now all of a sudden, I mean, you release a movie without a movie studio, and, you know, that releases like a blockbuster movie that did more, like three times as much as the Jason Statham movie that came out on the same weekend. And it's like, holy shit, like the world is changing, right? And, you know, which is why I think it's an interesting, so it kind of ties a few different points together. But, you know, again, segueing into, you know, that the you know, the state of the industry stuff and, you know, reading, I think a lot of people had sort of common thoughts, but there was definitely some interesting things that was said. And so Ron, I'm going to ask you, what did you think were some of the takeaways for you that you thought were very interesting about that article?
Well, as far as tying things together, I had both of the Costello brothers in it, David and Michael, and a quality, I mentioned creativity. Of course, those guys were musicians, so that's a creative element. But when I think about Michael, these people who are really successful were really visionaries. When you read what Michael said and what he thought back in 94 that led him into domains, it takes a visionary to do that. He was talking about they grew up in Florida and moved to New York City to try to advance their band. And Michael had said, it's kind of funny with Drew being in the cold weather. Now, Michael said, we're up there in New York and I'm freezing and I miss Florida. So that's when he got the idea in 1994 to get like palmbeach.com and all these names of these great geo domains that they had. And people are telling them you're crazy, you know. But first they were free initially, but you had to go through this whole process to get them. As soon as they started charging $100 a year, then these guys who got them free dropped them all. But Michael was there when, and Schwartz too, they told them they were nuts, they were idiots, they were crazy, but they had this vision. They saw what was coming 20, 30 years down the line. So every time I have Michael in there, he's just such a great visionary guy. And David's, it makes them such a great pairing because David is a creative, but also very good business guy. So they make a great pairing. And also with respect to vision, I loved having Chad Falkening in there because every time I run into Chad, he's it's like he's speaking another language because nobody's ahead of stuff.
I'm glad about the only one.
I was at a party with Colin Campbell, who founded Dot Club, has a house on the Intercoastal Waterway, and he has a Fort Lauderdale boat parade, one of the big ones in America. He has a party every year in December. So I usually, if I haven't seen Chad before, I see him at the party. So I saw him at that party, and this was the year Chat GPT was just coming out. So it's another thing. Every time I see him, hey, Chad, what's happening, buddy? And he starts going, oh, man, Chat GPT blew my mind. And he's going on. And I don't even know what he's talking about. So I love it because then I find out after I've talked to him, I said, wait a minute. I just see this stuff. That's what Chad just told me. It was telling me about. I didn't understand that. And, it's, yeah, and like, I mentioned that to other people like you guys, and you, I loved your reaction, because every time I mentioned that to someone, then someone mentioned it to me, said, it was Chad, is it weird how he always is talking about stuff and I never understand? The guy is just a visionary. So I love this.
Chad is one of those people, you know, there are certain people like Nikola Tesla that just get downloads. You know what I mean? Like they didn't learn any of this. They just get downloads. They just get like, it's like a lightning bolt from, you know, from the ether that just boom, strikes him, gets a download of what's coming 20 years in the future or 30 years or 40 years in the future. And I wish Chad could communicate in a way that, you know, us laymen could understand, because
mortals could.
I find it so fascinating talking to him. He's like one of my favorite people on earth to talk to. Yeah. My brain hurts by the end of it.
Yeah. He's such a sweet guy. I love him to death too. But now I pay much more attention. Like we chatted at the ICA meeting in January. I'm paying a lot more careful attention to stuff he's saying. And okay, remember, if it's something I haven't heard about, check this out when you get back. So those are good. And they were all good. I mean, I select people that are all going to have something valid to say. I thought people would find it interesting too. The story's out there so they can read everyone's comments. People might sometimes ask me, well, why didn't you have this guy or that person? A lot of cases they were invited. What I learned over the years, I started with, I think, maybe a dozen people when we started the first, this is the 22nd annual one, because I think we started a year after. So we started with about a dozen, and it grew and it grew and it grew. So I learned over time, I wanted to end up with a manageable number, but the people I approach are some of the busiest people in the industry. So there's no way that they can all respond within, it's usually a 2-week time frame. I need to get the invitations out, get it back. For some, it's impossible. So I found that my response rate has really been consistent in recent years. So if I wanted 24 or say 30s kind of on the outside or right around where we were now, I need to send out 40 to 45 invitations. So if you haven't seen like a favorite in there, odds are I did ask them to come on. But they just didn't have time. I think for the first time ever I'm running right now, there were three that actually sent me the stuff after, even though they knew it passed the deadline, just because they wanted to be courteous to answer. So if you ask the questions, I want to answer them. I know I got busy and missed the deadline. So I decided this stuff's too good not to share. So I'm running those three as individual posts in the lowdown so people can see this.
I think they did it on purpose just to get the isolated individual.
Yeah, single, but they didn't know I was going to do it. That's the first time.
They knew you were a nice guy and you wouldn't leave them out in the rain. They're manipulating the system.
No, but hey,
I have to keep that in mind. The other thing is I'm always hoping to have more women in it, because I have some of the most important people, my wife, my mother, my wife, my daughter, now my granddaughters. They've always been a big influence on me. So anytime I see that final board that we end up with, if I don't have enough women on it, I go, that shouldn't have worked out the way. So I invited more than ever. And we still only had four. So people still say, well, the women are underrepresented, by invited nine. So five others just didn't have a chance or whatever the case may be. So that's just like to answer a question I get a good bit is how come this, that, or the other. You know, we get, I cast a pretty broad net. I try to cover as wide a swath of the industry as equally as I can. We ended up this time with the response, we had 9 investors, 9 corporate people, and 11 brokers. So it's fairly evenly divided when we came out in the end. But gosh, there are just so many. I read them all and I learn so much from it. It's a great exercise for me because so much happens in this industry that there's a lot of stuff that I only know in a cursory way. I've seen an article here or a headline. So when I get all these responses back from everyone at the start of the year and read it all, then I'm getting an education on a lot of the areas that I don't follow as closely. I don't follow Web3 a lot because it's not a big investable thing, really. Don't really do a lot with new TLDs for the same reason that a lot of the, for an investor standpoint, a lot of any potential profits been taken and they build it in now. Everything's a premium registration. So, but I need to know about those things so I learn what's happening. So it's a great asset to me to be able to hear from all of those people as well.
Yeah, no, I think that's all awesome stuff. I mean, the fact that you've been doing it, it's now over two decades. And, you know, it's just interesting, I'm sure, to go back and even see what some of the predictions, just like when we look back at old Domain Sherpa episodes and, you know, and see, you know, just the.
You can see everyone grow up in person with your video. You can see them.
Yeah. Do you have any indication or feeling about who has been the most consistently accurate?
Oh, you know, no, I really haven't done that. It would be good because all the stuff, every single one.
You could ask ChatGPT because it's all public. You've got it all out there.
Well, you can go in the archive. If you go in the archive, the cover story archive, there's a link to every single one of those all the way back to the very first one.
Yeah.
So I'm so busy with current things, I've never gone back and done that. It would be interesting to see who's the champion. I see some people have pointed out in there, said, like, as I predicted this last year, this happened this year. And that's smart on their part to point out that they called something like that. But long term, I don't know. It'd be interesting.
Yeah, they could. People taking a bit of a victory lap when they get it right. And I think that's and you're right. I mean, using whether it's ChatGPT or Claude or one of these, you know, any of the models to or the LLMs to just say, hey, you know, take a, you know, and obviously it's all in the prompts. But yeah, there's probably a whole lot. I mean, you could do probably your book that way too. You know,
I was going to say, as soon as you said that, I said, now that's how we could do it.
That's how you do the book, man.
I'm going to have to give you a credit, Ron Jackson, co-authored by JT himself.
Co-authored by JT. But yeah, man, I think it's just fantastic. It really is. And we'll put the link to the article in the show notes for this, you know, for this episode. And yeah, it's just great stuff, man. I mean, it really is. It'll be interesting to see. So what about you? What are your predictions in the for this coming year? Like, what do you see for the domain space?
Well, I want you to answer that, but I also want, this was like, I really had two major questions I wanted to ask you. I wanted to ask you, what are the common threads that you've seen over all these years among the people that have stood out? And then two is, where do you see this industry in, and we could talk about 1 year, but I'm more curious in the 3 to 5 year range, and then maybe a moonshot of like 10, which 10 is silly because I don't know that any of us can even, you know, possibly comprehend where the internet and where domains go a decade from now. But I am curious about just sort of extrapolating all of that visibility you've had and, you know, insight and reflection as you write, that you have to have some feelings about what you think, right or wrong.
What always amuses me is when people say that this is the death of domains, this is going to end domains. Do you think that the street addressing system we have is going to disappear in 5 years or 10 years? The street addressing system has been the same since Benjamin Franklin invented it in Philadelphia in like the 1600s, centuries ago. But because what's better? They created the naming system, the DNS, because the numbers were too hard to remember. The names are unnatural. You can remember a name, and that's why certain ones are more valuable than others. They're adding, through Web3, trying to add utility to domains, which is all fine, and because they're trying to bolt it on to Web2. But I just don't see anything better. They work so well and do what you want them to do. If you can just advertise a link, and that's a lot of times that's the only advertising you need to do. The word can be the rest of your ad, or just a short line or two with a link. To me, it's just like, I just can't envision anything better than that that would do the job that domains do. So I'm always been very optimistic about it. As far as like near term in 26, my feeling was that 25 was very strong. We're seeing a lot of indications of corporate people having a better understanding of how this can, the right name can really supercharge their business. And so more of them are pulling that trigger. Someone had mentioned in one of the extra articles that I think Gabriel had mentioned that some of them are getting a little more conservative about budget. And I don't know if it's, but I'm sure you run into all types along the way or thoughts. But anyhow, I think that there's an understanding of the value there. So barring like a huge upset in the general economy, I think we're would be in for another very good year. There's a lot of stuff going on news-wise within the world, and there always are extraneous events that could blow everything up. But I think assuming any kind of economic catastrophe, I think we're in really good shape going, you know, forward this year and the next and beyond that. I think we're all going to be around. So as we've seen from 25 years ago to this point, the cream has steadily risen to the top.
Yeah.
So I think the cream probably keeps rising and keep rising. And so there's money to be made all the way down. I actually, most of my sales are in, and I play much more on the lower end. Having been a small business person, what I understood was budgets for small business people, maybe just mom and pops, what they could afford for a domain. So I sell a lot to that market because I know what they'll buy. I have a fast turnover, about 4% of my portfolio every year, which I think most people say it's usually 1% or 2%. So they're not big sales, but it's a steady revenue stream where I could turn it over when I'm gone to one of my kids. They don't have to care about domains. I just tell them, just renew this slate. There's plenty to renew it, and it'll just throw a revenue stream off to you. That was something Schwartz always preached, was create as many revenue streams as you can. So I'm very optimistic. I'm naturally, inherently an optimistic person, but I really don't have any qualms about being in this business and where we're headed.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, and I think it's refreshing. The optimism is nice. You know, there's a lot of doom and gloom, and especially if you spend a lot of time on social media or in, you know, with certain people, it can be a little bit, you know, overwhelming. So it's nice to get that optimistic. See, Drew, a little optimism is not so bad every now and then.
Yeah. Listen, my motto internally is live like a pessimist and invest like an optimist, right? So I try to, you know, always be watching my six. You know, never let costs get excessive. Never, you know. So I don't like to. I don't want to get out over my skis. I don't want to get over optimistic and start, you know. But no, I mean, look, we invest. You know, we put millions and millions of dollars back into the domain name ecosystem every year. It's not because I'm pessimistic, right? So, I fundamentally basically just agree with everything you said.
Let me ask you,
Drew. Exactly right. And cream just keeps rising.
Let me ask you a question. Are there any assets beyond domains that you'd rather put that money into at this point in time?
I'll tell you what, that's the best question of this whole conversation, because it, you know, something I try to emphasize, but I've never asked the question that clearly. I think it's the most important question that every domain investor asks themselves. You know, I've said this before. I think that, you know, basically, if you have money, you have capital, then you have more or less the ability to invest into anything. You can put it into stocks, put it into bonds, gold, crypto, domain names, real estate, land, farmland. You know, you name it. And it's your job to make a conscious decision about where you allocate that capital. And, you know, you may be lucky that the thing you consistently invested in happens to be the good thing, but you may also be missing out on other opportunities because you simply, you know, were too scared to go learn or too scared to try something else or, you know. And ultimately, all of us ended up in the domain industry because we, you know, it wasn't obvious, okay? We stumbled into it in some form or another. Somebody told us, blah, blah, blah. But if you don't try, then you don't find out. And so, you know, as I've accumulated capital through domains, for me, it was just natural. And I really, until, you know, we a few exceptions. It really wasn't until 4 or 5 years ago, it was really around COVID, that I even stopped to say, okay, should I just keep poor? Because literally, I'm telling you, whatever, you know, I don't live a huge, expensive lifestyle. I'm not into material things. I like to travel and have nice vacations. I live in a nice home. You know, we live comfortably, but I'm not an exuberant person. And so really 98% of our profits got dumped back into domain names every single year since I started. Huh. Every single year with almost no exceptions. And it wasn't until 5 years ago or so that I even stopped and said, oh, you know what? Maybe I should start putting the money into something else, you know? Diversify, right? And I did. And I've experimented with different things with, you know, real estate, and I've got a portfolio of financial assets, and I've got, you know, whatever. But the truth of the matter is that I basically always, and it's funny because I'm probably overemphasizing on this, but it just literally is like a very recent thing in the last week that I had started to say, like, look, I'm going to die with more domains than I'm ever going to be able to sell. And so what's the point of doubling down at this point? Like, it's not that I'm pessimistic. It's just that I've got a hell of a portfolio of domains. And if I sell them all at the prices I think that they're worth, like, God bless, I don't have to worry about money, nor do the next 3-4 generations of my children. Mm-hmm. But I will not do that in my lifetime. I just don't believe that I will. But I simply come back to, I don't know where else to put my money that will do better, or where I feel that I have a strategic advantage. And so I'm kind of back to just putting it back all in domains. And this is all very recent because, you know, some of the guys that I'm competing with out there in the streets, you know, to buy the good deals that come to market, sort of, let's say, you know, that are non-public deals. You know, there's 4 or 5 of us that are competing for these deals, you know, every day. And I've been kind of out of the game. I think I moved down from number one to the bottom of the list in the order of, you know, getting contacted. And I felt a certain way about that. And anyway, so this is a long way of telling y'all I'm back. You know what I mean?
I'm not back, ladies and gentlemen.
So the long-winded answer to your question is, I'm not aware of anything else. Not Bitcoin, not gold, not real estate, certainly. That I believe is a better investment than domains. I mean, I don't know where else you can take something that might be worth, whether it's $20,000, $5,000, or $10 million, you can condense that value into this digital thing that costs $10 a year.
Yeah.
Like, what? That doesn't, I think that's the most magical thing. Investment is about compression. It's about how much value can you compress into one thing, and what's the trajectory of that value? And, you know, I've never believed in like investing in gold or in silver or copper, because it's like, well, you got gold and, you know, a 1 kilo bar of gold is a lot of value compressed, but, you know, a bar of copper is like $5. And so, you know, it's not a lot of compression of value. And so domains are just the absolute most unbelievable compression of value. Even a Bitcoin is, you know, whether it's $100,000 or even if it goes up to $1 million, still $1 million. And then I can tell you, if Bitcoin's $1 million, our premium oneword.coms are trading for $25, $50, and $100 million on a regular basis. So there is no better investment, in my opinion. I'm not saying that to pump my bag. I literally have just spent the last few years deeply exploring a lot of different weird markets and investing in them and basically concluding that this is a fool's errand. The best game in town is domain names. End of story.
I can tell it's a very honest opinion, and you couldn't get a better endorsement for domains than that. Yeah, I'm very curious to see how you would answer that one. I thought you might have a few other things, but it's very interesting.
If you had asked me a year ago, Ron, I probably would have said, you know, some convoluted thing about, oh, it's good to have a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And it probably is. And it probably is good to have a diversified portfolio. But the truth of the matter is that if you have a talent, if you have a skill in this domain world, if you have you can prove that you've got some success, I think that, you know, you've got a competitive advantage that you won't find in any other market. And you can't compete against the hedge funds and the banks in the stock market, in the gold market, you know, in commodity markets. These are rigged games, right? They don't trade on fundamentals anymore because of, you know, passive investment flows and money managers and all this convoluted stuff that makes up our financial system. And domains, as we talk, I mean, it's kind of like we've kind of come to a culmination of all the things we've said throughout this interview. There's no gatekeeper, right? There's nobody else that can determine your future. It's up to you. You have to make good decisions about the domains you buy. You might have to do the work to find who you're going to sell it to. You might have to, you know, do a lot of research to really understand the nuances of the namespace that you're trying to buy in and make sure you're not stumbling onto a landmine. But you have an open landscape to determine your future, to determine your destiny. And domain names are, you know, up and to the right and have been for as long as you've been watching.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, and I think a lot of points that you make are important, you know, talking about asymmetric information or strategic advantage, right? I think that is such a huge part. If you've been in this space long enough and you have a feel and you've had success, then that success can build on itself because now you are have an intuitive sense of what sells for what. And then you also have a better sense of where how to acquire names for value. You know, we talk about it a lot that you really make money on the buy, not necessarily the sell. You know, so just being able to recognize, to Ron's point, like back when you first get started, it's like, what are drops? What are the marketplaces? What are closeouts, name jets, snap names? Like, you know, you just don't drop catch. You know, you don't know what you don't know. And it takes time to learn that stuff. And that's where things like DN Academy and big shout out to Seiger. And that's where Name Bio and obviously DN Journal and Domain Sherpa all become part of this thing that, you know, are very important ways to get acclimated so that you can develop that strategic advantage to make domaining a sustainable way to generate revenue and income, you know, and even then it still takes patience and it takes an appetite for risk and it takes capital and it takes, you know, connections and the ability to actually talk to people and to have some sense of how to interact and how to find deals and then how to go sell them. So, you know, but once you built that, then it's like it's almost like negligent not to take advantage of that, you know, which is why, you know, part of my job is to make life easier for Drew so he can do less work. But the more work Drew does, the more money we make. So it's like, you know, I'm trying to make work feel less like work, though. You know what I'm saying? That has actually become the goal. And, not just for myself, but for the rest of our team, too. And, you know, but I think that becomes a really big thing. And then, you know, we've looked at investment in different businesses as well as different assets. And, you know, look, it sounds great to say, hey, we're going to invest in hard assets, right? Well, what does that mean?
Every business sucks.
Well, it's like, well, here's literally, the thing. It's one thing to invest as a passive investor, right? But it's a whole nother thing to have to invest where you're an actual active contributing investor, because now that's taking time. And now it's a matter of now you're not just weighing the cost of investment, but now what is the ongoing cost of your time in order to help that investment return what it can return to match what you can make by buying and selling domain names when you are an expert in that space. So, yeah, you know, it's a really interesting kind of thing. There's no industry like it. You know, I think Shane does a fantastic job every time he's on the show, always talking about why domain investing is literally the best thing you can do in your life because of it affords us this lifestyle. And, you know, it's such a unique industry and it's, you know, work doesn't always feel like work and the success can be great. So it's, you know, it's not easy. And one thing I say, it's like just because we make it look easy doesn't mean that it is, but it, but if you can crack the code to a certain degree, it can be really, really cool and a lot of fun. So, you know, but it doesn't happen without something like you and Ron and DN Journal and, you know, all the other folks who have really built this, like, you know, taking this niche business and creating, like, you know, a foundation to make it accessible and actually, you know, profitable for people that are willing to spend the time and really dig in. So, yeah, man. So I think that's, and we're almost running up on time. So let me give you the floor for, you know, here at the end. Any final thoughts? Or, I mean, what are you excited about here in these next, you know, you said you're bullish and optimistic about domains in the short to medium term. Like, what are you excited about? Either personally or
in the short term, I'm excited about the rest of the day. I'm excited about getting up tomorrow morning and the morning after that. There's nothing, and that's just the fact. There's nothing I love more about this business or in a life than being able to get up in the morning and look forward to the day ahead. And every day is different, too. That I think that's, again, creative people need that, and domains give you that. There is a, you have to be pretty well organized to take care of the business side. I guess it's because anything that you might have that makes up your psyche or soul or whatever, this being in this business kind of addresses that. You can be involved in every aspect of it. So it's just like never knowing exactly what the day will be like. It's just like, and it's just like, I get them in. I can't wait to see what happens today. And even if it's just an average day, it's been a fulfilling day. And so that really sums up my whole life and my thought about the business and everything else. I don't know that, in fact, I do know for sure that I wouldn't, if I weren't in this business, because there were days in, like, say, when I had the mute record stores, when no one came in the door that day, and you're saying, gee, why are sales off today? And you're stressing over this, or you got all this inventory that didn't sell. Oh, I shouldn't have bought all that stuff. And now you got a hard inventory with thoughts. If you don't sell the thoughts, I mean, you've got it in the domain name, but like Drew said, there's such, they can be affordable if you buy value, but even if you paid $20,000, they're still affordable and smart. So it's just like, for me, so stress-free and not having to worry. And I guess in broadcasting too, I always said that of those three businesses, I met more, to my surprise, more creative people and more and better people as human beings in this field than I did in the other two. And I enjoyed all three. Loved the broadcasting career. Got to meet some of the most famous people in the world from all fields. I loved the music stores and getting to play music I love for people in the store every day. But they were always kind of a little bit more one-dimensional things about them, or there were stress factors that kind of like offset the positives. Where in this field, I feel like it's just like it's almost all positives. I rarely have something that gets me upset, because you just feel, if you feel lucky and fortunate and blessed, as Drew said, you know, what more could you want?
Dude, I love it, man. Good vibes only with Ron Jackson. You know what I'm saying? That's the that's the theme.
AKA
today,
good vibes only.
Yeah,
that's it. I love it. So, well, great, man. And I think that we share a lot of that same sentiment. I mean, I think that, you know, kind of talking about it earlier, it's easy to get caught up in some of the doom scrolling aspects of our lives these days. But we are very blessed to be in the position that we're in and to have as much control over our future and our well-being and our just day-to-day life, which, you know, is really a blessing. And to work with the people we work with, and both like within our close teams and then in the broader industry as well. So, you know, that's what's cool too. It's like there are a few people that we deal with where we're like, just don't like that guy. You know, it's there are a few of them. There are a few. But, you know, a lot of the people we've sort of curated these networks, you know, and mm-hmm. and I think that's been very sort of, whether it's deliberate or not, you know, it's been sort of purposed and, you know, and it bears fruit, really does. So, all right, well, cool, man. Listen, we appreciate you being here. Appreciate everything you do. Appreciate everything you've done. So, Ron, thank you so much. Drew, thank you so much as well, as always, for being on and sharing. And then to the audience, for all of you who tuned in today, I want to thank you so much for tuning in. We say it on every show, without you, there is no us. So thank you guys for tuning in. You have any questions, Ron is not hard to find. We'll have all of his info. You can obviously dnjournal.com. We'll have the links in the show notes, X handle, all that kind of stuff. He is a, you know, again, if you don't know, I mean, now you know, but I'm shocked if anybody listening isn't already familiar. But anyway, we're not hard to find, so hit us up. Otherwise, we'll see everybody here next time on Domain Sherpa, where all roads lead to domains. Good vibes only, and peace out.